The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, a really warm welcome. Really warm welcome. It's quite something to be practicing together. I know I'm actually in this room by myself, but and perhaps you're in your room by yourself too, but somehow we're practicing together with the wonders of technology. So tonight I want to talk a little bit about these five strengths. Five strengths. And I'll start with the story that comes from the suttas in the Mahaparinibbana Sutta. That is, it's the sutta that describes the last few months of the Buddha's life. And it's quite remarkable that the Buddha knows when he's going to die. And he proclaims, I'm going to die in 3 months. And then after he makes this announcement, he tells Ananda, his attendant, to go assemble all the monks that are nearby, all his followers, and then the Buddha addresses them. And these aren't the last word he says before he dies, but it's nearly. And he says, those matters which I have discovered and proclaimed should be thoroughly learned by you, practiced, developed, and cultivated, so that the spiritual practice may endure for a long time and be for the benefit and happiness of the multitudes. So he's describing that what they have learned, what their practices have been, he wants this, his teachings to be passed down through the generations, to endure for a long time. So they should practice them. It's not just so much memorizing all the teachings, but to practice them. And then he says, and what are those matters? He says, you know, those matters which I've discovered and proclaimed. And what are those matters? And here he summarizes his teachings, and he summarizes it in this way. The four foundations of mindfulness, the four right efforts, the four bases of success, the five faculties, the five strengths, the seven factors of awakening, and the Noble Eightfold Path. So it's a list of lists. And some people know this as the 37, if you count up all those different elements, there's 37. 37 wings to awakening, 37 aids to awakening, sometimes also called the seven sets. There's seven elements in this list of lists. And of course, there's a total of 37 things. So the Bodhipakkhiya Dhamma, these aids to awakening. So in that list, there might be a few things that you're not familiar with. Foundations of mindfulness, four right efforts, five faculties, seven factors of awakening, and Noble Eightfold Path. Plenty of Dharma talks about these and in the Dharma books and certainly sprinkled throughout the suttas. But there's two that are not quite as well known. One is the four bases of success, the Iddhipada. I'm not going to talk about those this evening. I'll just say a little aside. Those are really, really difficult to translate and to understand. And even the commentaries, they're kind of like, there's such a different interpretations of them. And it's not entirely certain that they offer anything unique. So that's often why teachers and scholars haven't really fleshed those out. And then the second item in these seven sets, the five strengths, sometimes called the five powers. What are these? These are defined as the same as the five faculties. That is faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. This list of five. I've given a number of Dharma talks on these, and And the first talk that I gave was talking about when you cultivate these five faculties, you slant, slope, and incline to nibbana, in the same way that the Ganges River slants, slopes, and inclines towards the east. So it kind of has this sense of inevitability if you cultivate this, and it leads towards awakening. I gave a talk on, like, heedfulness or diligence is another way we might understand it, is a key part in how to cultivate these. And one way we might understand this list of the five faculties and the five strengths that begins with faith and ends with wisdom, one way we might understand it, it's the progression of going from faith to wisdom, passing through energy, mindfulness, and concentration. So using those as tools to go from faith to wisdom. And I gave a talk on the importance of balancing these different faculties. And in particular, we can balance energy and concentration. This gusto we might have or striving that we might have has to be balanced with concentration. Sometimes energy can be up and concentration can be down. And is there a way that we can have them work together? And then I gave a talk on the importance of balancing faith and wisdom. Not to be too much letting wisdom slide into just knowledge, accumulation of knowledge, or faith lead to some dogmatism or constriction. And of course, this recognition that mindfulness is the one that helps us to balance energy and concentration and faith and wisdom. So now this is my fifth talk, and this introducing this idea of the five strengths. Of those seven sets that I introduced, and when the Buddha he's summarizing his teachings, the five strengths, the five powers, are mentioned the least often. And for the most part, they seem like they're the same as the faculties. So why would, what purpose do they serve? And perhaps it's why we don't hear about them in Dharma talks and in Dharma books. But here's a sutta that talks about what is the difference between a faculty and a strength. And in the sutta, the Buddha gives a simile of a river. And he says, suppose that there's a river, and I'm paraphrasing now. Suppose there's a river, and there's an island that's in the middle of the river. And if you look one way, you can see, okay, the river splits, and on one side is part of the river, and on the other side of the island is another part, and then downstream they come back together. So you could see where, in this way, if you look this way, this like maybe straight onto the island, you can see there's two streams of water. But if you look upstream, before where the island is, you can see there's one stream of water. So in the same way, we can look at these qualities, faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration as wisdom, as faculties, or see them as strengths, depending on the way we look, depending on the perspective we take. Are we looking straight on at the island, or are we looking upstream, or maybe even downstream for that way? So if we look at them as faculties, we can consider them as something that needs to be developed and cultivated. And certainly there's a lot of talk, or a lot of the teachings really support this idea that these are capacities that we have, but they can be cultivated and developed, in which they might be more perfected or come to fruition, or allowing them to blossom, show up in different ways. So the emphasis is more on there's more to be done. They should be developed and cultivated. In contrast, the strengths are, can we appreciate what's already here, what we've already done. And from this standpoint, from this frame of reference, we might be able to recognize that because we have some faith, it's able to withstand its opposite, that is, distrust. Because we have energy, it's able to withstand some of its opposite, that is, laziness. Because we have mindfulness, it's able to withstand some of its opposite, that is, heedlessness. And because we have some degree of concentration, we're able to withstand or not to be overcome by some of its opposite, that is, distraction. And because we have some degree of wisdom, we're able to not be overcome by confusion. It doesn't mean that distrust or laziness or heedlessness or distraction or confusion never happen. It's just more the stance that we take, that is, appreciating what is here, qualities that we already have, and what function they may be serving, how they might be supporting us. So often we tend to be dismissive or ignore those things that are cultivated and developed, and we tend to focus on what we need, or what we should be doing, or what's not quite right. But what the Buddha is pointing to here is that these same qualities can be viewed in different ways. Something to be developed, and not my language, or something to be appreciated. And of course this brings to mind the quote by Suzuki Roshi, which goes something like, I don't know what it is exactly, but the quote is, "You're perfect just the way you are, and you could use a little improvement." From one perspective, you're perfect. There's this beauty and grace and perfection that we all have. And, not but, and maybe we could use a little improvement. So can we hold both of these in our minds? Can we appreciate both of these? Sometimes it's very difficult because as humans, we have this negativity bias. We have this, and we have this, this word is escaping me right now. We have this inclination to look at what's wrong, what needs to be fixed. And of course we do. Of course we do. I need to cough just here, just a moment here. Yeah, I just had a tickle in my throat. I'm not sick, I just had a little tickle in my throat. So we might have this inclination of looking at what needs to be better or somehow or fixed or something like this. Or we might be just naturally or have an inclination where we tend to notice that the glass is half empty. Or we might notice that the glass is half full. I don't even know if it's really possible to have a completely neutral lens, a neutral perspective. From that simple simile of what the Buddha taught, we're looking at the river one way and we could see where it's split. And we can see the two streams of water. We look at it in another perspective and we can see where it's one stream of water. But we always have a perspective. We can't see the stream without having a perspective. So we have a tendency to, when we have a tendency to lock onto what's not quite right, what needs to be fixed, what needs to be cultivated and developed, sometimes we might use these types of words as a way to beat ourselves up a little bit. get me wrong, I don't want us to let us all off the hook. There are things to be cultivated and developed. But can we notice that there's more than just that? There are things that qualities that we already have, and that we can shift our perspective and to see both, to see the beauty and perfection, and to see some work that might need to be done, some room for improvement, so to speak. Often what happens if we have the inclination to seeing problems, that's just the way that we view the world, is like just one thing after another, you know, that has to be fixed, then there might be a way in which we are seeing, a perspective in which we might be taking, which kind of increases the problemness, so to speak, of the experience. That is, that if we see something that's not quite right, there might be a sense of self that gets reified, that gets constricted, that gets solidified, and I have to be the one that fixes that thing, or I have to fix this about myself, or that person has to fix this thing. And there's kind of a way in which there's this clumping or this narrowing down around the sense of self, either myself or some other self, blaming them or blaming ourselves. Blame is a way in which we really often can solidify things, to become kind of rigid in our views of ourself or of others. It's kind of innocent. We're not meaning to harm anybody. But there's a way in which if we're inclined to notice the way in which things are problems, that goes along with kind of the solidification of a sense of self or a blame, even though it might be kind of subtle. And then there might be making more problem than is needed. For example, if we don't have the solidification around a sense of self, then there might be more of an opportunity to consider, well, what are all the conditions that came together that caused this event, this experience, this happening? Maybe I find myself eating mindlessly cookie after cookie after cookie. One way might be to view this or to experience this is to really kind of blame myself. Diana, you're always eating cookies. And what's wrong with you? You know it's not good for you. And there's kind of, when are you going to stop doing that? You know better. And you know, there's this kind of this blame that happens. And it's all about Diana and her not doing well around the cookies. But there could also be, there's a certain relaxation around this idea that there's a problem. There could be this recognition of, well, okay, you didn't have a proper lunch, and you're feeling tired, didn't sleep well last night, and the cookies are right here on the counter, and you're a little bit nervous about what's going to happen next. So, of course, you ate the cookies. Right, so kind of pulling together some of the conditions so that we can see what's happening, as opposed to kind of like making a rigid sense of self. So in the same way, can we appreciate some of the qualities that we have, some of the strengths that we have, without having to make a strong sense of self around it, and without having to only focus on the problems. To be not a glass half empty or a glass half full, but in order to have the flexibility to see, yeah, I can look at it this way, it's half empty and there's a person or a self that's to blame. I could look at it this other way that's maybe a little bit delusional and doesn't see that there's anything that's a problem, maybe doesn't even pay attention. But can there be a third way that can appreciate that the conditions are coming together, and maybe there's a way in which there are some of these qualities, these faculties that are beautiful and are supporting, and maybe there's a little bit of development that can be done. You're perfect just the way you are, and you could use a little improvement. So this idea of this negativity bias, of course we have this, you know, evolutionarily we are the ancestors, we are our ancestors. If they didn't take care of things that were life-threatening, of course, then they wouldn't have passed their genes on to the next generations and we wouldn't have inherited them. So of course there's this human tendency. But it's, I appreciate very much what Rick Hansen says about this idea about the negativity bias, that he says that positive experiences, or maybe even appreciating ourselves, are a little bit like Teflon. It's actually difficult to do, the ways we've been socialized and a little bit of our biology. So this idea of the strengths, these five strengths, faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom, to appreciate when they are there and to recognize that they might be counteracting some of their opposites, that they are counteracting some of their opposites. It takes a little bit of effort. So Rick Hansen says that positive experiences like Teflon, they can just be wiped away. In contrast, unpleasant negative experiences are like Velcro. We tend to stick to them, and the mind likes to ruminate and go over them. And this is often where kind of the blame comes in. Kind of like, I can't believe he said that. I can't believe she said that. I can't believe they said that. I can't believe I said this. So something along those lines, a way in which we can get sticky and can get stuck on there and find ourselves maybe going around and around. So is there a way that we can recognize when this is happening and to allow both to be there, allow this to see this flexibly, with it in a flexible way, both up the river, so to speak, and straight on when there's an island? So one way to view these 37 aids to awakening, the seven sets, is that they're in numerical order. A couple of sets of four, a couple of sets of five, one group of seven, and one group of eight. Another way to view it is as the path. That is, it starts with mindfulness and goes through effort, and then these bases of success, which can be related to concentration. And then the faculties and the strengths, and the seven factors of awakening, and then the Eightfold Path. So if we view it as a path and as a progression, starting with mindfulness and ending with the Eightfold Path, and maybe I'll say a little thing here, is the Noble Eightfold Path, which also can be translated as the Eightfold Path of the Noble Ones. And there is a valid way we might interpret that, as the Noble Eightfold Path is just the expression of what awakened people do, how they are in the world. So if we use that model of the 37 aids to awakening, then the strengths come after the faculties in that list. That is, it's after there's a certain amount of cultivation, development of the faculties, then the strengths come on board and are as a support and are really flowering and blossoming and leading to the factors of awakening. So what is it about the faculties leading into the strengths? Maybe it's when faith and our own capacity and in this path of practice is really strong. Faith is one of these elements that is not in any of the other of these seven sets. We see energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom in some of the other sets, but faith is the one that's unique. Maybe when we use that as a strength, as a way that it really can support our awakening. So our inner critics may sometimes rise up and say, we shouldn't think about our strengths. We should really just be working on what needs to be developed and cultivated and have to do better, strive, do more. But I think that the Buddha is pointing to here that the strengths we to recognize what we already have, capacities that we already have, and how they may be operating in our lives is a support for awakening, is a support towards finding greater ease, greater freedom, greater peace. And not just for ourselves, for others, so that we can be a support for others. So may you find an opportunity to notice that we can be flexible in our view. We don't always have to be focusing on what needs to be done, what isn't quite right. We can also notice and appreciate what is working, what is doing okay, so that we might help others. So might you have an opportunity to exercise, to use this flexibility of view, this flexible view. Thank you.